do a lot of seasons talk, Ennis and I. When do the seasons officially start?
It's officially, not a debate.
It is to me, but...
I mean, you're right. We do a lot of talking, but yeah, I'm glad you didn't frame it as... We do a lot of debating as to when the season starts, because no, that there is no debate about that.
No, there is. It is a debate to me. But it's officially summer right now, where you're not doing your show. I didn't do my show yesterday. We're filling in on fan pregame. You're doing it today, the rest of the week? Or there's one day off?
Today, tomorrow, back doing my show Thursday, and then back doing fan pregame on Friday, because there's an attempt to make my sleep pattern as unpredictable as possible.
Yeah. Are you going to take a look at your old life and afternoon drive and remember what it used to be like when you had a good night's sleep and
felt
good about the way you lived?
No question that was different, but yeah. I also had to drive in traffic, and that was in the before times traffic,
before
which was bad.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't like Armageddon level bad, right?
100%.
It wasn't professional athletes renting bikes or like walking down the Gardner because they're like, "Well, this is unsustainable. I'm just not going to be able to make it to my thing in time."
So, I think one of the funniest things ever is now seeing the news reports that have been coming out. Toronto congestion unsustainable. Liberty Village people trapped, and you go, "How? Yeah."
Yeah,
obviously. Yeah, duh. who thought it was going to be fine? We're already one of the worst cities on planet Earth when it comes to congestion and people's drive times. We have people who just refuse to take public transit, but also we don't have enough public transit as is anyway.
No, we don't have that. Yeah,
and so, and then they decided to close a major artery to the city, and people are going, huh. It's not very nice.
I've been to California. I know you've been to California. I haven't been in a while. But I think by sheer numbers, like Los Angeles has worse traffic than Toronto. I kind of need to go see what that's like, because it's hard for me to imagine. And I got to figure shutting down a lane of the Gardner lets us leap past Los Angeles as far as
we
got to
be number
traffic.
One. We're number one.
You would think.
This is, buddy, I did the Biggest Loser franchises last week, just of all time. It was in honor of England losing again, where they went, oh, we're right there. And then they went, oh, we lost. we made it to the big game. We lost again in the big game. And I thought it was hilarious because I just listed 10 franchises, right? They were the first 10 that came to mind. I actually didn't put too much thought into it. It was just what I felt in my heart. And there were all these fan bases, like Minnesota Vikings fans especially, right? Where they were upset at me. They were tweeting me going, how could you leave off the Minnesota Vikings? Our legacy of losing is incredible. That's Toronto now, but with traffic. We're the worst. Yeah. And we go, how dare anyone say that anyone is worse off than us? You don't know what it's like to be us. I will say, having been to LA quite a few times, there is a different level to their traffic. It just stretches back further. There's just you can see into the abyss. Like the abyss stares back at you and you stare into some of those LA traffic jams. But I will say that it's just there's more routes, there's more ways to go. So I don't know. It's a toss up.
And you're a little out of your depth as like a person with a driver's license now, but not a driving person, right?
Yeah, it's true.
This is
true.
You didn't play the game, you know?
You know what
you didn't
sucks?
Play the game.
You know what sucks though? Don't you think I want to have a car? What's the point in the city? What's the point of having a car right now?
I don't know.
Every single time I get little dream of going, oh, you know, it'd be nice to actually own a nice vehicle. And I try to start thinking about the things I would do with it. And then I go, oh, you live in a land. I want to go on Mad Max. I want to go. Actually, sorry, Mad Max. They actually drive. You know, they actually. We're just
it's,
parked.
There's
Mad
no
Max.
Traffic. Yeah. There's no just, traffic in Mad Max.
Yeah. We're parking lot Mad Max, where it's just everyone sitting there mad at each other. Emotep, mad at everybody, shooting flames, guitars. It's crazy. I don't know how people do this right now, man. I know we'll get to sports in one second. I think that this one's relevant to everybody who's in traffic.
Obviously,
whenever I'm in it, whenever I'm stuck in traffic right now as a member of this city, I get so upset. Like my heart rate is horrible. I'm looking at my watch trying to monitor my heart rate going, hey, what's happening? It's got to be horrible for your health. This has
no,
to be
good.
Cigarettes
you know what
traffic.
It
this
is
traffic I... is cigarettes
Yeah, I will say, I've being as old as I am and getting my driver's license as early as I did, I've driven in horrible traffic jams, but before like the era of Waze or GPS, where it's like literally you had no idea. Yeah. You're like, oh, I could just be here forever. At least now, like, there is some comfort for me because there's nothing worse than waiting and not knowing when that wait is going to end.
Yeah.
Like, that is truly – that is like, – actually, that's true. I don't think we can talk any more about it.
No, I agree. I agree because yesterday I was coming back. I took Via to get back into the city.
Mm-hmm.
And in classic Via fashion, when they have delays, they just don't say anything. They just go quiet and they're like, hope nobody notices we're 2 hours behind.
Were you on the train?
Yeah, dude. They don't
put you on the train and they just don't start the train for 2 hours?
They go, shh. And then I finally was the only person, because this is Canada, and one of the things that is truly Canadian is no one bothers anybody. Like, they don't want to bother anybody. Yeah. No one wants to ask questions. We just sit there like lemmings, right? Going, it's fine. It's totally fine. We'll just rot here. Who knows when we'll get off the train?
No.
And finally, I stopped one of the, what do you call a person that works on a train?
I don't know. It's like a flight attendant, but it's like a train attendant, maybe? Maybe train attendant.
We'll I stopped one of the attendants finally. And everybody looked at me aghast, like, oh, how he's speaking to the person, he's speaking to the representative. I, excuse me, what is the delay? When will we be moving again? And she just smiled at me and said, she gaslit me. She went, there was an announcement earlier. We're just waiting. And I went, oh, my mistake. And there was no announcement. People right away, as soon as she left, all the train cars started to scuttle around and go.
You were the leader. People, they're like,
all the lemmings started to buzz. They went, There was no notification. I went, maybe I missed it in my headphones. Oh, I did. They just were quiet. They were just silent. And you're right. That is kind of the worst, because I'm just sitting there saying, oh, indefinitely. And then finally they move the train and you go, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for deciding that now we can move it. Anyway, so yeah, you're right. I think that originally I would have said less is more in those situations, that because all you can see is that red up ahead of you on Waze where you just go, oh, it's the worst, that red.
But at least
and
you
then
know.
You see those little pockets of yellow, and then all of a sudden you hit
like,
one of those pockets.
I just get there.
But it's only for a second, and then it's back to red. Oh, no. Oh, yellow was overpromised. It was so much better in theory. Anyways, you know what was better in theory was doing a million shows on the Toronto Blue Jays deadline. You and I have done – I feel like – how many of these do you think we've done where we've talked about what the Jays should do at the deadline? Because we're going to do some variation of that.
Ever since the end of the Stanley Cup final, and then there was free agency for a second. I mean, anytime you talked about the Blue Jays before then, it was same deal as well. So it's been we're almost in August now, so it's been at least a month.
So I don't think there's any surprises as to where you and I are at, right? You're kind of more in the team. You're pot committed. You should go into this off season and try to re-sign Bo. Are you still on re-sign Bo?
I don't know. I mean, that one's if somehow his number is depressed and find him closer to the middle of where you were talking previously. If there was,
what would you sign Bo for tomorrow? His camp comes to you. You're now the honcho. You're the top dog.
Yeah.
You're Shapiro. And you know, you're like, hold on, I gotta blame Ross Atkins for everything. I gotta fire him and then I'll be right back. I'll be right back after I lay this all at this guy's feet. Surely it's all his fault.
Firstly, I think I would be prioritizing Vlad. So if doing both it applies.
No, it does. Of course. We're already doing that. I'm saying Bo comes to you today, and it's irrelevant. It's just a conversation of what you would feel comfortable having Bo Bichette at today. Because people always do that game. They always go, oh, I'd love to have Bo Bichette if he went at a depressed number. But I don't know what that is to me anymore. Like, it's a four-year contract, 180?
No. There's no chance Bo Bichette signing a four-year, $180 million contract.
That's what I'm saying. So 4 years, 150?
I don't think he's signing for 4 years.
I'm not saying he is. I'm saying, what would you do? I'm not going over 4 years.
If I went,
I don't need to do Bo Bichette for 8 years. That's not in the cards.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he is only 26 years old, though, right? Like, you do have to remember. And I mean, this is the first time in his entire career.
Correct.
He didn't play out the whole season, and we'll see if he comes back. But this is the first time he's shown any sign of not being Bo Bichette. And I guess there's reasonable – you can be reasonable in thinking that maybe the calf thing was impacting his performance all season long. But, yeah, I mean, $30 million a year for Bo Bichette is probably – if he's Bo Bichette, is going to feel like a steal, especially the way salaries are going. Like, my Vlad number in my head, I think the Blue Jays would be ecstatic if they could get Vlad for 10 years at $300 million. Like, that would be a tremendous coup. To get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at that number.
I actually think that's kind of the move with Vladdy. I think the move with Vladdy is to give him the lifetime contract and be like, hey, you're the face of the franchise moving forward, but let him hit a respectable big number. Kind of like how they do these inflated contracts now where they go, you know, the Shohei number, we went, wow, this is so massive, and they deferred it all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Vladdy's going to defer it, but yeah, I think that if you can tack on enough years to get him close to that 300, because he clearly wants – you can't give him the Matt Olson contract, right? Like, I think he's the 180. That's why I had that in my head where they went, yeah, you're Matt Olson. You're a premier first baseman. Here you go. Here's your $180 million. I just don't see any reality where Vladdy can sign for anything less than 250.
Yeah, because he's 25. Or he's not even 25. He's 23 or whatever. Anyways, and Bo's not much older. Yeah. It's an interesting question as to who's going to age better, right? Because Bo is not going to be playing shortstop in 10 years, like pretty clearly. Like there's a case to be made he shouldn't be playing shortstop right now. Well, Vlad hasn't been the ultimate walk machine that he was in the minor leagues. He takes a lot more walks than Bo Bichette. Like that patience factor does age a lot better than the like swing at everything and make contact at an incredible rate. But I do not see a way in which you can give one guy 10 years and the other guy four. Like, that's just not going to work out. And those guys be so intrinsically tied together from the moment they arrived at the major leagues throughout their minor league ascent. It's hard for me to imagine Bo Bichette agreeing to take half the term of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Again, this was a game of what you would do as what you view as, you know.
What I would do is I would say you're in for a penny, in for a pound, dueling 10-year, $300 million contracts.
Oh my gosh, that's not what I would want at all. I think that we're at the point now, and you know this because I've how long have I told you trade Bo? 2 years now. I never wanted to give Bo Bichette a big, long contract extension. I don't think he's going to age well at shortstop position. Mm-hmm. I've always been pretty suspect of him playing there in the first place. And you and I have spoken to him directly. We talked to him a couple of years ago about moving off a shortstop, and he went, basically, no. He said, if Andrelton Simmons comes here in his prime, then sure, I would consider it. But outside of that, no, the guy wants to play shortstop. He's not going to move off of it. And especially if you give him a 10-year contract here in Toronto and you're telling him you're still one of the faces of the franchise, he's never going to move off of it. Plus, I'm not even sure, like, what is Bo – whenever I ask people that too is, okay, well, if he's not a shortstop, which way on the diamond does he go? And they go, I guess second base. But I don't know if he'd be a great second baseman either defensively.
I mean, he could move to a corner outfield spot.
Great. Yeah, that's great. No, it's like what
I mean.
That's...
If he's leading the American League in hits, I mean, he can play anywhere on the diamond, right? And he's obviously athletic enough to play in a corner outfield spot.
I don't need to give a corner outfielder a 10-year contract extension. I'm sorry. I'm giving a shortstop a 10-year contract extension. I'm not giving a corner outfielder and a first baseman 10-year contract extensions and saying that's the way that my organization is built. I think that especially you saw the Bo reports. This is one where we watched him do that interview in San Francisco, was it? Where he went, oh, it's a great baseball town and anybody would be lucky to play here, blah, blah, blah. Now there's the Bob Nightingale report saying that he has been telling friends and family he would welcome a trade. I feel pretty strongly like we all know the writing's on the wall here. If Bo Bichette would have had any real trade value, that he would have had pretty strong trade explorations. I'm sure the Jays are taking calls, but that they're getting lowballed and they're looking at this and saying, well, we'd rather do it in the offseason after hopefully a run of play like he had a couple of years ago where he was ice cold for the entire season, finished the year strong, had his numbers kind of bounce back, and then sell teams on the idea of, yeah, actually just trading for him for one full season.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me about the Nightingale report was what that means is, hey, I would welcome a trade. Okay, and let's take that as an earnest thing that Bobichette has said.
That's, and that's as like politically correct as possible of way of saying I like a trade.
I suppose. I mean, that's certainly one way to take it. But he's just an honest dude, right? Like the Hazel May question, hey, would you be surprised if you were traded? No, I wouldn't be surprised. Like he's very honest.
Yeah, I think these are breadcrumbs for him saying, like, yeah, sure. I wouldn't be surprised because I want it. I've been making
So let's explore that. So let's explore that. So what does that mean? Because the Blue Jays stink right now, but it's the first time they've stunk in his tenure, right? Like they've been a playoff team.
I would argue they stunk last year, but yes, they were a playoff team.
No, I mean, the Yankees stunk. The Yankees missed the playoffs, right? Blue Jays were not good. They won 89 games, but they made the playoffs, and that's the name of the game, right? And that's a lot better than a lot of teams spending more money than the Blue Jays did a season ago. But yeah, they stink right now. If that's the reason why Bobichette wants out, I can understand that, despite him being in his middle 20s, these careers don't last forever. You don't want to waste any part of your prime playing for a team that's not going anywhere. That part I get. If it's anything beyond that, I can't wrap my head around it. All this team has done is acquiesce to this dude. They fired the manager he wanted fired in Charlie Montoyo. He made that pretty explicitly clear in his first media availabilities after Montoyo was given the pink slip that was
I forgot how cutthroat that was. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Is it possible that Bobichette went into Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro's offices and said, we got to get rid of this guy? Like, I don't discount the possibility the way he reacted after that. Then
I certainly think that if they would have asked him about it, that his answer would have been pretty brutal.
Yeah. I mean, to our earlier point, they've never moved him off shortstop, never even really made any real allusions to that possibility, even though there were many, many moments throughout the course of his minor league and then major league career where you could have said, Nan, yeah, you can hack it at times, but we have way better defenders at that position than you, and you're still
when
a valuable
he was younger,
guy.
There was that threat of Anderson. There was rumors.
Never happened.
Him,
never happened.
Happen. Yeah.
Never
that's,
happened.
But that's as close as it ever happened was a rumor.
They wouldn't let him go to arbitration. They let Vlad go to arbitration. They're like, hey, maybe some ill will here between these two parties, and we've seen it go sideways with Marcus Stroman. Who cares? We're not going to acquiesce to your demands. We're going to let an arbitrator decide. Would not do that with Bobichette. They did everything in their power to avoid it, and they signed him to the 3-year deal, which covered all his arbitration years. They got more serious. He's Captain Serious. Obviously, like I'm thinking Bo would have preferred to have the offense provided by Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez, but that was a direction I bet you Bobichette was in favor of. They spend money around him, and there was one guy even this offseason that he mentioned explicitly as somebody who he could see being a professional hitter, role model, mentor for this team. It was Justin Turner. They went out and got him. So if it's anything outside of, hey, I play for a lousy team, I would welcome a trade to a better team, I don't get it. Like, that part I get if it's just the Blue Jays stink, and at the deadline, if I could go to a contender and play next season guaranteed to be on a good team, I would welcome that. If it's anything outside of that, anything negative towards the Toronto Blue Jays organization and the franchise, I need an explanation for that, because I don't understand why it would be.
I don't think it is. I think that this is, like, those are great points raised by you, and I think that that's really good context for fans where if Bobichette is eventually traded this offseason, you're right. There should not be any animosity towards him. Like, even with the Donaldson thing, right? I think that kind of, it altered his legacy just a little bit in the city, the way that things ended, right? And part of it was him being sour at the new regime and whatever. But yeah, he went out being pissed off at Toronto and them being a little pissed off at him. I don't think that Jays fans could be upset with Bobichette if he wanted to be moved at the end of this offseason, because he's a guy who every single year starts with, I want to be on a winner. And you can say the whole thing about how this is the first time the Jays have stunk, and fine, we can parse with whatever last year was. I think that if it was this year's American League and you put it on last year, the Jays don't make the playoffs. They made a very watered down playoffs as an 89-win team. that snuck in with a god-awful offense that was backed completely by
pitching. You've seen what a god-awful offense looks like. It was not a good offense, but this is god-awful. Last year was god-awful. Don't say god-awful, because this is god-awful.
It was god-awful. Guess what? It's the same team.
No, it's not, though. But that's what this season has done, is it's put last season in perspective for me, is that, last season was a slog and horrifying, but at least they had a chance. This team has no chance.
Yeah, which is why I feel like I'm going nuts. I feel like the person in the movie that is telling the truth, like when they're living in a haunted house and they're the only one that knows it's haunted, that's screaming about next year, where they're going, well, they want to try to compete next year with the same group. I'm watching Gausman not look the same. I'm watching Barrios have an ERA over 5 since May. I'm watching Chris Bassett turn 38 years old. I'm looking at them going, wait, you're going to thin this out? You got how many spots to figure out? And they're saying, no, we gotta run it into next year. We gotta figure it all this out next year. We're gonna put all our eggs into next year's basket, despite watching this for, you know, what's gonna end up being 2 full seasons. But to close the bow thing, that's it to me, is maybe that's the way we should be looking at it, is, hey, he might not be the best GM because he wanted John Schneider and he wanted Justin Turner, and maybe you're right, he would have welcomed some of the trades that they made. He probably loves a guy like Varsho. He looked at that deal and went, hell yeah, this is an awesome deal for us. So maybe he shouldn't be a GM.
Fewer smiles, the better.
Yeah, fewer smiles on the team, the better. Hey, I'm down with it. But I think maybe we should be looking at it and saying, hey, he does know if this team can win or not, and he wants off the ship. He doesn't want to be here anymore because he doesn't think that they can win over the next couple of years.
Yeah, maybe. You know what would have helped them this year, though, is if Bo Bichette performed anywhere close to
no question,
his career
norms. No question. That's obvious. That's always, buddy, this is why I don't re-sign Bo Bichette. And you could make the case when you said about the, hey, who's going to age better or worse. Mm-hmm. Vladdy hasn't exactly proven to be Mr. Reliable. I don't think that you can put it down in pen that he's going to age extremely well. I think that there's probably a higher floor for Vladdy than there is for Bo. I just do, even though Bo has been way more consistent. I just think because of the position he plays and the fact that he's not going to end up being a defensive liability for you, whereas I do think Bo Bichette will be. I think Vladdy's career the next 10 years is going to be a little bit higher if you're doing the dueling 10-year contracts. But that being said, he's gotten out of shape in seasons before. There's got to be questions about giving him a big ticket contract when that's happened before he even landed one. Like, I don't know how anybody could be really feeling secure in that, but it has felt like it's always one of the two where you're going, oh, well, you know, you got to pick it up and you got to do it now. And I know this is Bo's only real true year, but man, a couple of years ago, we did have the same thing in 2021 where he was dreadful for the entire season. Then he finally turned it up for the last 22. Month of the year. 22. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Right. Of course. Cause Vladdy was amazing in 21. They were both amazing. Yeah. I don't want to have your organization tied to two guys that have had so few moments of both of them going at the same time for the next decade. I'm sorry. That does. It matters to me.
But like, we can quibble about both guys going, right? Like, I've been Mr. Vlad detractor, and he's never been the guy that I thought he would be outside of that 2021 season.
Yeah, don't you think this is who he is, though, now? Like, this is the close. Yeah. This season is the...
Yeah.
Hey, he's,
which
this is
actually, like, in this
pretty
world...
Good. Yeah.
In this world, where the average batting average is .242.
Yes.
And the average OPS is, like, .701. And he can give you an .830 OPS
close to 30 bombs. What did you always say when Vladdy was coming up? You wanted to see the eye, right? You want to see the decisions at the plate. And that has been the thing for me this year that has really started to materialize better, which is him taking the walks and him identifying, spitting on more pitches.
Yeah. His OPS plus of .135 would be his second best OPS plus outside of, right? So like 2021 was the outlier season. It'd be just back of that as his second best season of his career, which is not, listen, he's not Juan Soto. He's not Aaron Judge. Those guys have OPSs over 1,000. He's not that guy. Maybe he will one day be that guy. He wouldn't be the first guy in Major League Baseball in the history of it to like be in his late 20s, maybe even 30 before you finally actually unlocked some unreal season. Like Christian Yelich had an MVP season, right?
I don't doubt. I actually would say that if you were going to bet on will Vladdy have another year where he's like in the MVP mix, I think that I would say yes.
Yeah.
Down ballot MVP voting for him one more time in his career? Yeah, for sure.
Sure, absolutely. So it's not what we thought, but it's not bad, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been the lowest season OPS-wise in a full season he's had was last year's 116, OPS plus of 116. Bo Bichette, I mean, this would be the first time he'd been a below-average offensive player. Like, those two guys in the lineup have been net positives for you every single year career.
Yes. It's not about being net positive, though. It's about being net superstar. Like, that's the thing that you're doing if you're paying.
Bo, at his position, has been a superstar throughout his entire career. This is the first time he hasn't been a superstar.
Yes, yes, yes. If you decide to take 2022 and his incredible month and a half that he closed the season with.
Yeah, but
and
that
say,
doesn't, like, I don't care. Like, the numbers are the numbers. Nobody's consistent.
Okay, well,
nobody,
the numbers
nobody
are also
goes,
the numbers.
Like, nobody goes 2.5 for 5 every game, you know, with, like, a bomb and a half every week. Yep. Like, it doesn't happen for anybody. Guys go through ebbs and flows, and at the end of the season, those are your numbers. That's who you are. That's why you play 162 games.
I don't know why we do this game, though, where it's like, oh, well, these two guys have been stars, and these two guys have been so great. They've been positive. Yeah, like, nobody's arguing whether or not they're positives. What I would argue is that they really haven't shown very much of, oh, wow, you definitely want to build an organization with these two guys belly to belly, and you're just feeling like, oh, they're striking terror in other organizations. Like, this isn't Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, where if you look at the Yankees right
now. But they're not going to get
that's what I'm saying. So I don't want to build – I don't want to give 10-year contracts to guys that aren't that. Like, anyways.
Well, yeah,
but if
how
you
do
talk
you get
about,
those guys?
Sure, but if you want to also talk about the numbers of the numbers, and I know it's only – it's 50 combined plate appearances, but the numbers are the numbers, 50 combined playoff appearances – or sorry – 50 combined at-bats in the playoffs, 2 RBI, and Vlad's got an OPS of 422, Bo has an OPS of 638. Like, the numbers are the numbers, too, when the chips have been down.
I mean, there was a narrative around Barry Bonds in the early days of his playoff tenure that he couldn't hack it in the postseason.
Sure. How many plate appearances in the playoffs before you start to say the guys haven't done it in the playoffs?
I mean, God, it would a lot more than 50. Would you say 50 combined at bats?
Yeah. Yes.
That's 25 each, man. That's a week.
Thanks.
A week's worth of games.
You really did win the math elite of the set. No, it's okay. It's all right. You're the guy who says he believes in clutch, and then whenever it's not, you know, convenient, kind of zags off. But
some of those, and like how many plate appearances in those two games against the Rays when they were first, you know, getting their feet wet in Major League Baseball in that weirdo, bizarro two-game
for sure. I don't view them as chokers. I don't view this as like the Leafs thing where you go, these stars can't get it done in the playoffs. But I would say that, but you get one more run there and you get a few more and you continue to put those numbers up and you're starting to think about it. Anyway, my only point is that the idea that, you're anchoring your franchise with two superstars, I just don't like it. I think that there's better ways to spend your resources than given the two of them 20 combined years and, you know, all the hundreds of millions of dollars. That's just me personally. I think that this year you kind of are in a good position to pivot, and the Jays probably would have pivoted had Bo Bichette put up good numbers. Had Bo been tearing the cover off the baseball this year, had he been healthy, I have a hard time believing that the Dodgers wouldn't have come to them and gone, we're really going to put this down. We're really going to try to make this happen. I'm less a believer of the Cleveland thing, just because Cleveland giving up prospects and giving up the future and then them paying Bo Bichette a year later, that makes less sense to me. But, I really do think the Dodgers would have been there, but now they look at it and they're saying,
we go the rest of the season without Mookie Betts and Bo Bichette, and like we're counting on both of those guys to come back from pretty severe injuries and hit the ground running at the end of the season.
I'm with you. So, but okay. So you're still not there though. You don't feel like this is, cause to me, I'm going, the breadcrumbs are there that the Bo Bichette era in Toronto comes to an end this offseason.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's the most likely scenario. Again, it would have to come with, I don't know what franchise is going to just believe that the real Bo Bichette is in there if we don't see him again this regular season. Like, you need to see him again. And if he looks like the old Bo Bichette at the end of this regular season, and you can pivot into an off season where, you get something commensurate to his value, which is the best hitter in the American League over a half-decade span, of course, with one year left of team control. And then you sign Vladdy to the 10-year, $300 million deal, like the Rafael Devers deal, which was the same exact circumstances, right? Like just before opening day, going into the last year of his team control, signs the extension with the Boston Red Sox. It can be done. It's harder to do, right? But yeah, you can't go into a season where, are we going to win? Are we not going to win? And then are we going to hold on to our franchise icon? Are we going to lose our franchise icon? Yeah. Like, it's just an unsustainable way to go into a season. Yeah, if you've traded Bo Bichette for upper-level minor league talent, and you can spread that around and then use the savings to hit free agency in a different way and try and plug some of the holes that you have, obviously, in the lineup, and then you're going to lose some starting pitching as well. And I think you should reasonably expect more of a diminishing return from some of the older starting pitchers in this rotation. Like, yeah, that's a sustainable... I mean, and then secondarily to that, so Vlad, at his age, if you're signing him to a 10-year deal, at the end of the 25 season, you're like, oh, we're no good. We do need to have a harder reset. He can stick around, you would hope, resurgence of the Toronto Blue Jays in 26, 27, or 28.
Yeah, 100%. No. I got no issues. Listen, if Mike Trout could be on the Angels while they lose every single year in the division that is chock full of losers, I'm pretty sure you're going to be fine having Vladdy on a team that is kind of in the middle of a rebuild. This is something, you know, you and I used to do a lot of would you rathers. And this is the last one I want to save for you before we go into the deadline. Would you rather, or actually, I don't even want you because I know what you would rather. Do you think this fan base, and I'm talking all of the fans too, because sometimes we get a little too up close to it, right? Where we're online and we follow baseball people and whatever. The people whose opinions we solicit are the ones that are actually more baseball people than, I would say, fans at the ballpark kind of thing, right? What do you think fans right now would rather? Would they rather you keep Shapiro because he is bulletproof, right? Like it seems as though he's not going anywhere. Everybody indicates that. But you keep Shapiro and he says, yeah, you know what? We do have to do kind of a rebuild here. We have to be a little bit more aggressive with some of these trades. We got to make sure that, yeah, Gausman, maybe Bassett, maybe Bo Bichette. You extend this basically anybody to that isn't, I would say, Vladdy and Varsho, the two Vs, right? Because they're not trading Varsho. Those are the two pieces that you're kind of keeping, but everything else is up for sale. And that even includes Jose Berríos, right? We got to do a harder reset, the one that you say, but you know that it's going to be Shapiro in control, or you leave him in the position that he's in right now, where you're really actively trying to do the best you can to build a competitive roster next year, knowing that, you know, what you said, that this team was decent a year ago. What do you think fans would rather? Run it back like 3.0 or rebuild under Shapiro and letting a guy do two rebuilds?
I think any fan would, and honestly should, want the Blue Jays to try and win next year. Like, tanking and rebuilding sucks. Like, look at this Tigers team, which has now not made the playoffs for 10 straight years. They're going to have another season of selling, and obviously they should be, despite that they're you know, only a couple of games under 500. They stink, right? They're no good. They're, like, slightly better than the Blue Jays, but that's no the great accomplishment. It's been 10 years for that team trying to rebuild and accumulate young talent. And having the first overall selection and getting Spencer Torkelson, right, instead of Paul Skeens. They didn't get no Paul Skeens. They got Spencer freaking Torkelson. He's going to be out of baseball in a couple of years, right? Like, there is no doubt, and fans shouldn't be faulted for this.
If and now there is a rumors way of Tarek Skubal getting traded, now you're like,
oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, thing, sure. Why not? Yeah, the one like bright spot. Yeah. Unless you're talking about a Jackson Holliday trade, which would be awesome.
Yeah, I know. You're obsessed with Jackson Holliday, but yeah, it's like you would trade anybody for Jackson Holliday.
A pure baseball trade perspective, who wouldn't love a Tarek Skubal, like Cy Young candidate for the best prospect in baseball? That'd be fun. Anyways, yeah, the idea that, hey, all rebuilds end up with the Houston Astros being in a contention window of a decade because they lost 100 games for five straight years. Like, it doesn't always work out that way. Like, look at the Phillies who tried to do it and eventually couldn't and eventually pivoted to spending $250 billion on free agents, and now they're good because they did it that way. No, if you're a fan of this team, I think, rightly, you should say, I know this season went totally haywire, and you got to figure out how it went wrong and fix those issues and focus more on offense as opposed to run prevention and filling out the lineup top to bottom and not counting on four guys from Buffalo to make up half of your batting order. I think any fan should want this Blue Jays team to try and compete next season. Now, in the long term, like if you're actually in it to create a sustainable winner, a championship-level team, I also don't think that there's any debate that that's the best way to go about it. Like, if you are trying to build a World Series contender, I don't know how you can square that with competing next season, considering where you are, yeah, considering the holes you have, considering the state of the minor league system. There's just no way.
Yeah.
But if you're a fan, if you're just like a casual baseball fan, yeah, you don't care about 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years down the road. You just want to go to a baseball game in 2025 where the Blue Jays have a chance to win.
I actually don't feel that that's correct anymore. I think that this fan base has seen enough of this group, and they know that the chance to win regular season games, that's not the prize. That's not the goal anymore. You already had your innocent climb with this group. It's already fallen apart with this group. I really do believe that most people would be okay with a soft rebuild, as let's call it that, because I don't think it would be a hard reset. You know what the Jays have that Detroit isn't going to have? Spending. Jays now spend. That is 100% undebatable with this team. You can stomp your feet all you want about ownership or this or that. The Jays are number two in baseball in terms of revenue percentage that is put into the actual baseball team. They spend astronomical amounts of money. I just, you know, I'm a well-read person. I follow things in the world. I do my job.
Into payroll? I've never seen that one before.
Yeah. They're like 75% of the revenue that they generate from the baseball team ends up going right back into spending on the actual baseball team. Like, that's how committed they have been to this product, man. They are going to spend. I don't believe that the teardown rebuild that people kind of use, I think it's a little bit of a straw man with this organization, to be honest. Like, I don't think that they'll ever go into 10 years of the doldrums, because I wouldn't want that either. Are you kidding me? Like, no, man, I'm a customer. I like to go to these things. I'm not spending 10 years at the ballpark watching anemic offenses and going back, being that team that is the Tigers saying, oh, do you enjoy Tarik Skubal? Is he the only thing that you actually enjoy going to the ballpark for? Yeah, we're trading him for the 7, 8, 9 prospects from the Baltimore Orioles. No, I don't want that. What I do want is for them to sell the pieces that they have now, be realistic about what their most obvious winning cycle is, which is the next one, build around Vlad Jr., and use those pieces eventually, just like they did in this one, where when they build up a farm, start making trades, start spending money, try to win seriously again in 2 years.
What you're specifically talking about is like some of the guys that are under team control beyond just this year, right? Like you're talking about the pitchers, I think, more specifically, right?
The pitchers is the only things.
Oh my God. I mean, listen,
anybody
if you
that
can
wants
extract
any of these three pitchers, you can have
100%.
Any of the three.
Yeah.
And that, again, Barrios' name has been left off the list this entire time. And I'm going, no, Barrios can go too.
Yeah. It's hard to backfill what Jose Barrios is giving you day in, day out, and his durability, unreal. He's a great, great asset. If you can extract younger,
that's what I'm saying,
like assets commensurate to the value that he provides, which is tremendous, should go after it. Clearly, I think we can say, hey, maybe the real Kevin Gausman, the old Kevin Gausman's in there on a single start basis, maybe. But the idea that you can just pencil him in, I mean, his first year as a Blue Jay was unreal. He didn't issue his first walk until his like 10th start of the season. He was just
the first year of Kevin Gausman, you and I sat at the ballpark together and said, this is the closest we felt to Roy Halladay since Roy Halladay.
It was unbelievable. His control of the strike zone, his swing and miss ability was unbelievable. He's obviously a major league caliber starting pitcher. He's a middle of the rotation guy. And Chris Bassett, again, pretty much what you expected to get when you signed him in free agency. You can't be disappointed at all in the return you've gotten from Chris Bassett. But if there's somebody out there that needs him more. Now, the Bassett one's tougher to imagine a playoff contender going after, because it's hard to imagine his what he brings to the table as a starter being a playoff rotation.
I'm not as sold on that anymore after talking to a lot of baseball. I just think that if you were going to do it, this would actually have to be the time, though.
Sure. Listen, I'd be listening on all of those guys.
Yeah, it just to me,
because those are the guys with value. Like, look at the anybody's list of the top end of the available talent via trade. Blue Jays don't even show up there. It's like, Yusei Kikuchi, the guy with an ERA over 6 since the end of May. That's well, I mean. Love Yusei Kikuchi, and he's been a revelation since his first season as a Blue Jay.
Yes,
yeah, I don't think
him.
You're if you're a contender, you're like, well, the Yusei Kikuchi's putting us over the top. Jimmy Garcia, maybe you can see him getting big outs in the playoffs, but he's a reliever and a pending free agent. It just came off an injury. He's pitched once. Danny Jansen, sure. I mean, he has an OPS now of 700, right? He's oft injured. He can do the job.
I think I said this to you over the phone, but if you got back the Steve Pierce trade for Danny Jansen, that's your best case scenario where you get a Santiago Espinal type prospect who's
honestly,
close to the bigs.
What? If you believe that you have a better ability to bring Danny Jansen back at a reasonable number by keeping him,
I would rather do that.
I'd rather do that.
I would do that too. As well, especially when you look at the catching market and say, well, who's all out there? And they don't have anybody
Alejandro
in the
Kirk
minor
and
leagues.
Brian Servin is like your duo in 2025.
They also don't have anybody in the minors. And I know catchers bust more than any other, so even if they did have one, it would be a risky proposition. But no, I'd be down for bringing Danny Jansen back. I'm with you on this, though. The idea that them selling these rentals is in some way going to meaningfully replenish the cupboards, it's not. They're going to be in the exact same position they were, and that's the thing that is most clear to me. They've tried to do it where all they do is spend, spend, spend. This organization, in order to nail down talent, they have to be able to make the Barrios-type trades, right? They have to be able to make the Varsho trades. Right now, they can't do that. This past offseason, why were they so – why did they come back with the exact same team? You know why? Because they tried to spend some money. They went to try to go get Shohei Ohtani, and free agents go, yeah, that's nice that you try to spend the most money on us like you did with George Springer, but sometimes we're not going to want to go there because you're not a top-tier free agent destination.
I mean, if that was the case, then they lucked out. Matt Chapman would have been the only guy, and apparently, like, according to him, they pivoted too late on him, but all those other guys have been just disasters. Like, the Cubs are in the same spot with Cody Bellinger.
But Benny, this is almost what I'm saying too, is when you're trying to build a team through free agency, that's like the worst way you can do it, because even with Cody Bellinger, who people want and went, maybe this is good. Now you're stuck with Cody Bellinger, and the Cubs are already saying, well, maybe we'll eat some of the Cody Bellinger money. Look at what happened with George Springer. You sign bad contracts in free agency. Everybody knows that. It's just about how many bad years you're going to get with the free agent.
Correct.
That's the rule. That's the risk you make. You have to have a farm system. That's modern day sports. Look at the Leafs. You got to have guys that come up and supplement your roster.
Correct.
Look at this team right now. You got to have guys that come up and supplement your roster. Not just the actual everyday players, but the pieces that you can move in trades. And so right now, I just don't see how they can continue down this path of, we've got nothing down there. We've got nothing in the cupboards, and we're trying to run this bare bones team out there, hoping that Spencer Horowitz becomes a superstar. Like, it's just enough is enough. You got to do something meaningful. You got to add to that position. The only way you can do it is with the pitching. Make a decision on some of these pitchers, and I would have said do it now. You're right. Anyway, all right, let's take a quick break. I want to talk to you about, is the boogeyman still the boogeyman of golf? Next, with Ben Ennis.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Ben Ennis, close out good hour. Xander Schauffele, who I actually thought at one point was destined to be modern-day Ricky Fowler in the sense of, hey, he's always around it but doesn't end up winning the big one, ends up getting two this year. So
sucks.
In my
really
eye.
Sucks. I'm a bad person.
You thought you were the same? Oh, no, you were cheering for the same Schadenfreude. No, that's okay. I get it, yeah.
I'm sure Xander Schauffele is a fine enough gentleman, but I love having like the loser franchise or the loser, the choker dog person in my life.
Especially when the hardcore fans are like, you're an idiot if you think he's a loser. He's won other tournaments. And you go, yeah. You know, it's like what we had with David Price for a little while before he won, was people went, you're an idiot if you think David Price is a choker. It's sample size. It's like, and
Clayton
then
Kershaw.
He won. Yeah. Oh, I... I'm still,
because you can have a moment of non-chokerish.
Yeah, but I'm
you can
still...
be a non-choker for a second and still be a choker and revert to form.
By the way, what's the deal with this? Like, why am I? I don't know if it's my algorithm or whatever, but I'm seeing a ton of people being mad at people who call the Dodgers World Series Mickey Mouse. I think it's because maybe Mookie Betts brought it up on his podcast, and then everybody else weighed in because it's dead season. Mm-hmm. But I've been seeing a ton of people going, it was so hard, and they didn't have fans, and it did. It started with Mookie. You haven't seen any of this discourse online recently?
I mean, not really.
Anyway, I would just like to say I saw Lana Rizzo. She was so mad. She was like, anybody who says it is an idiot, and I'm here to say it's Mickey Mouse. It was the Mickey Mouse World Series.
Obviously,
they played
it was 60, Mickey Mouse.
They played 60
Name
regular season
one moment
games.
From that World Series against the Rays?
Yeah, no, my favorite counter, my favorite point they keep making is, last I checked, all the other teams played, and yeah, any other team that would have won, it would have also
Lakers
won the Mickey Mouse
championship. Also, yeah. Like obviously, yeah. Mickey Mouse, and even more Mickey Mouse because they literally played the finals without fans in a bubble. So at least there were fans at the World Series. But yeah,
I do think baseball is harder to play no fans than basketball because, like, basketball, these guys are used to playing in runs, you know, where they go to high-end runs, like the Rico Hines stuff, where they play each other in competitive games. And just it's music and a few people, like, that's fine. Baseball, I cannot imagine being, you know, Kenley Jensen trying to shut down the World Series game and there's no crowd. It is a little weird where you go, where do you get the – where do you get the juice from? That it's a little strange, but I still think, yeah, you played 60 regular season games. Plus, you're the Dodgers. It's the perfect team to call it Mickey Mouse for winning it. And then won? Everybody knows this, too. And the Tampa Bay Lightning did this. When you win multiple, then you get the Mickey Mouse one turns into a real one. But
then
if you
can
just
do it as, like, you, it was so impressive, right?
Yeah, it was.
The Lightning
get that. Then you get to compare the wins. Yes. And you are no longer Mickey Mouse. But if you did it as a one-off, you're in the mouse house, baby. Anyway, the golf stuff, we see Schauffele win. He finishes with two majors this year. It's still Scotty Scheffler's year, right? It's not Schauffele's year. What?
Absolutely not. No.
It's Schauffele's year?
Who cares? Scotty Scheffler won six times and won his second Masters.
Yeah.
He won some big PGA Tour events, a lot of them not full field, right? The elevated events. And shout out to my buddy Jim Zwolak, of the dads on my kids' hockey team, who alerted me to this fact. Do you know Scotty Scheffler's never won a tournament beyond the month of June? He's never won in July, which there's some pretty significant.
He can't handle the heat.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, the only tournament he won was that, like, the Mickey Mouse Hero World Challenge thing, Tiger Woods' thing. He has never won beyond the month of June in his professional golfing career.
What a stat. Did you text that stat to McKee?
No, I should, though. Yeah, I should be
sending
it around to everybody.
Yeah, you should. That's great. Buddy, that's amazing propaganda. No, here's the thing. I think it is still Scotty Scheffler's year because he did. He became golf's boogeyman, where I saw quotes from certain golfers going, I didn't play with Tiger Woods, but now I play with Scotty Scheffler.
And
how long ago
was that, though, right?
Legitimately going into this tournament.
Well, that's idiotic. Okay.
I'm just saying that Scotty Scheffler started to have that aura of this guy is different from everybody else in the field, and he is the number one killer. If you see him on the final day and you get him at a minus number, you bet him. And I will say that
he has a 6.5-foot putt because he's.
But that's it. That three putt actually took away some of the boogeyman stuff from me. I went, you're not the boogeyman. Boogeyman doesn't do that. Boogeyman doesn't go boo and then like, oh, I'm sorry, I saw my own shadow. I got scared of it and I ran back inside. I think that Schauffele winning too and the way that Scheffler lost or fell out of contention rather, kind of combined for this the conversation at least for it to be Schauffele's year and
diminishing a little bit of that's the name of the game when you're at that level. We're talking about two of the top three players in the official world golf rankings, and obviously Scheffler won. I believe, Schauffele was third going into the Open. Yeah. I don't know if he's jumped up to two beyond Rory McIlroy. But when you're at that level, and it's not it literally is not about winning anything other than majors. Like, for you, sure. Yeah, you want to be stroked a check for $2 million for winning the big PGA Tour event. That's better than not getting that. But for the casuals, who cares? Like, even the Memorial, Jack's tournament. Like, that's nice. Yeah, well done. Who cares?
Who cares?
It's about stacking up major championships. Now, all of a sudden, Xander Schauffele is four back of Phil Mickelson's major total, and he's won two before Phil even won one? No, that's what it's about.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. Like, I think this was a tough weekend for old Scotty. Lucky for him, it was like the deadest sports weekend of the year. Everybody was at the cottages and no one actually saw it. Did it actually happen if no one saw it? Is Scotty Scheffler's best thing. Anyway, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, and we will see you tomorrow. Jacob Schaffelberg this week.